Welcome to the James Bond Complex. My name is Matt.
I'm Edgar.
We are a James Bond podcast where we take on the entire James Bond phenomenon from Fleming to film and everything in between.
Ooh.
Yeah. And today is debriefing day, and this is near the end of June. We're actually recording this on June 24th, which means we're recording this on Quebec's national holiday, Saint-Jean-Baptiste.
Saint-Jean. Bonne Saint-Jean, Mathieu.
Bonne Saint-Jean, gars. We are not really there to discuss news. So the recent rumors of Bond and some of the plot elements that have been leaked on certain media platforms, we won't be discussing them on this show, but we are aware of them. And if you're listening to this episode and you've been, nervous about tuning out on a podcast and maybe being spoiled, you're safe. I don't feel like discussing this. I've discussed this with you, with our buddy Jean, James Bond Quebec, and I'm kind of...
Yeah. I'm tired of discussing about that stupid Tyrannosaurus Rex that shows up at the end.
Before the flying
saucers. I don't
know
if I'm going to go see the movie. Before the flying saucers, yeah.
Yeah.
And the Abominable Snowman.
And James Bond.
It's Norway. I think it's in the Norway sequence. Actually, no, I think they actually bring the snowman in the Italian sequence. I don't know why they would do that.
James Bond has been a vampire all this time, and that's why he's been a spy since 62. He's a vampire. That's
He also sees dead people. Spoilers, Madeline.
Okay. Suddenly I want to see our version of Bond 25 of No Time to Die. It's a horror movie.
Bond 28 coming out. I'm working on my Bond 27 now.
Yeah, me too. Actually, stay tuned for that. Actually, I'm rethinking the entire thing that I've given you hints of where I was going, but I've decided to scratch everything and start fresh. So there's not new movie news, merchandise wise, on the 007 store. There are some stuff, but, contrary to me, you've actually went back to downtown Montreal. I haven't in months now, but you did. You did.
Yes.
Please regale us in your adventures in clothing.
And my adventures in clothing, I was at the Bay. I needed to get a gift for Father's Day. I was doing this on the Saturday just before Father's Day in the morning because you and I met up with John in the afternoon. And I said, well, I'm downtown. Without getting into details, we thought for a brief second there might have been a James Bond. There might have been a James. No names will be named, but we thought there might be a James Bond thing coming up related to Olivier Brown in Montreal.
Yeah. You know,
turns out that's
are.
Not the case, but yeah, well, whatever.
That was funny.
So I said, well, whatever. I'm downtown anyways, and it's not because the 007 Heritage Collection isn't there, that there isn't any Olivier Brown, or Olivier Brown, as we like to say, at the downtown Ogilvy store. So I said, well, whatever. I still have a little bit of time to kill before I meet up with Jean and Mathieu. So, yeah, whatever. I haven't been to Ogilvy in years. Why don't I just go? And basically, it's like a Disneyland, if you like clothing, that doesn't cost less than $1,000 for one sock. It's like the Bay. But it's just, like we were saying this before the recording, it's like if you went to the Bay or you went to Walmart, but it was only Dolce & Gabbana, Tom Ford, and Brioni. Like, just that. Like, they had nothing cheaper than that. It's quite weird walking around in there. But they do have a little Olivier Brown, They do have a little on and around section, and it's very small. It's very quaint. As suspected, there is no 007 Heritage material. At least not yet, anyways. And but it was interesting. It was still fun getting up close and personal with Olivier Brown's material. They had like a polo that was like I think I was telling you this on Saturday at Jean's. Like if you think of a couette, like a divan blanket,
mm-hmm.
That sort of softness, but they made a polo with it. It's interesting. And those swimming trunks, though, man, they're good. Oh, they're so nice. And their polos are nice. It really is, you know, is it worth $300 Canadian dollars or $400 Canadian dollars? Eh, but it's really nice. It was nice to see a little bit of all around in person. And which, funnily enough, I sort of made my way around the fourth floor, and it was only coming back towards the escalator that I spotted the Olive Bar Brown. So I sort of did the j'ai fait le tour of the fourth floor, and I went through the Tom Ford section, then through the Brioni section, then got to the Olive Bar Brown. So I saw three James Bond brands back to back.
Yeah, you went to the entire James Bond clothing universe of the past 25 years. One fell swoop.
Although I didn't spend too much time in the Brioni, I felt it was very obvious to see why they decided to dress Pierce Brosnan in that. It's very nice. Very nice, Brioni.
I love buying, my merch. I'm always disappointed there's not that much easily and cheap James Bond merch. There's no action figures that I like to collect. There's not much, but there's two things that are stopping me from going on Oliver Brown's website and going click purchase shop. Price is one of the thing, to be honest. But that never stopped me before. I bought very expensive stuff that, you know, I've got the Bulldog, which is, you know, it doesn't look like much, but it's, you know, I think I paid that thing for $200. It's $200 of material that's not clothing or anything I can wear. It's just looking at me sitting on my shelf. It does nothing. There's no buttons or anything on it. It's, you know, it's the price probably of an iPad, I guess.
$300. Oh no, iPads are more expensive than that.
Oh, okay, a cheap iPad then, the Kmart version of an iPad, a console. There are consoles that are $200. I've seen them on sale. Anyway, it does nothing. It's worth $200 and probably more now. I still have the box. I'm not reselling it, but you know, that's one thing I bought. So I could technically. I'm often tempted of buying Oliver Brown. I'll be honest. You know, I've been watching David's video from time to time. And I'm like, ooh, this looks really neat. And the other thing that blocks me is the sizing. I am a rather large gentleman.
You're like also, medium large.
I'm big, man. They stop at the XL or 2XL, and I'm like, yeah, with the fit that they have, it's not gonna look good on me at all. But you know, if they ever make a decent version of that shirt that Pierce Brosnan wears in Diamond, the blue shirt with the floral design, you know, I will buy more blue shirts with the floral design because I love that shirt. I don't know why, it just struck a chord in me. If they make a decent, somewhat good looking replica, I'll be honest, I'll probably buy it if I can fit it. Nice. But yeah, I'm done with the Oliver Brown.
Now, right. It's they have nice stuff.
They have nice stuff.
Say that much. Yeah, holding it in my hands, they actually had a swimming trunk that had the, you know, like the James Bond posters, but this one was like a Monaco Grand Prix, but painted. Monaco Grand Prix from the 60s. It was really nice. It was really cool.
That's the frustrating thing. Their stuff looks nice, but it's a little bit too expensive. And, you know, the sizing, it doesn't help people like me. Maybe one of those days I should make a video on how to dress nice for larger Bond fans. I don't know if it would people would be interested in that. The frugal fat Bond, basically.
Jesus. I'm sure you're not the only one.
I'm not the only one. I can't be the only one. But yeah, We've been keeping an eye on the other O'Brien promotions that they've been doing, and hopefully one of these I can not only afford but fit in one. In the meantime, you know me, I always have different subjects to discuss, and this is something I've actually teased on the interwebs, some a subject that I've discussed with you a couple of times. I think I even brought it up last spring when we went to New York to the Darlington. I call, I want to build up to it. I want to talk about a bit about art and artists and how they interact with their artwork. Sometimes artists put a little bit of themselves into their art. I mean, you look at Star Wars, it's the story of a rebel going up and against an empire, which kind of reflects George Lucas' original fight to get the movie made, and now he was sort of a rebel himself, trying to make a movie that nobody trusted him, and he had to like go to hell to make his movie. And artists always put a little bit of themselves, whether voluntarily or involuntarily. There are people who believe also, I think it's called the death of the artist theory, which basically says that the artist's intention or background doesn't really matter. It's the art itself that has meaning. It's sort of independent of from the artist, which you can put your own thoughts and feeling into a piece of art, which also fits with a theory that I've came up with, because it's something that it also goes with another rumor that has been going around since I think the days of GoldenEye and The World's Not Enough, that Barbara and Michael take turns producing the movie. They're both involved, but one takes the lead and the other sort of is follows the other one. And I think the order that it goes is Tomorrow Never Dies. I think all of them worked with Cobby on GoldenEye to a degree, but after that, it's Michael took the lead for Tomorrow Never Dies. Barbara took the lead for The World's Not Enough. Michael was back for Die Another Day. Then Barbara took the lead for Casino Royale. Michael took the lead for Quantum of Solace. Barbara took on the lead for Skyfall, and Michael has been was involved in Spectre, and Barbara is the lead for No Time to Die. I'm gonna bring some elements that are gonna.
Do we know, just sorry to interject, but do we know where that rumor comes from? Because it's not the first time I hear, but I never knew what the genesis of that.
I don't remember whether it was on a podcast, but I heard this before. If somebody online can point us to the origin of the rotating producer lead theory, please point us in the direction. I think I even we did even discuss this with the did we discuss this with Joe? Or I don't remember who we discussed it this with. It might have been Bill. That sounds like a Bill Koenig, the spy commander. He's more in the know when it comes to producing and stuff like that. He might have hinted something, but I've been aware so long, I don't remember my source. But
Bill, if you have any knowledge about this, confirm or deny. Confirm or deny.
but still, it's still an interesting theory. So my theory and is that the 19th wait, yeah, 19th James Bond, The World Is Not Enough, is probably the most personal movie made up to that point, and also believe that I've been listening to Nobody Does It Better, the book that came out recently about the oral history of James Bond movies, and the author does mention that Barbara Broccoli actually came up with the storyline, the basic notion of the storyline, which deals with oil, after watching a documentary on oil empires in the Middle East, and she was fascinated by it, and sort of ha that's the initial like idea for that movie. And The interesting, like, I think it's the last time I watched a movie when that aborted recording that we lost to the ends of time, that we had Jason on, that I accidentally destroyed. Sorry again. I apologize, but you know, I noticed something that and I don't think I've ever heard anyone mention it. And here it goes. Cue the music. Okay. You have the character of Electra King. She plots to take over her dad's empire, murdering him and destroying a pipeline to make that a rival pipeline, so that hers is the only one that people can use, so she can enrich herself to no ends. That's actually Barbara Broccoli. And there are moments in the movie that really scream to me. And I don't think, you know, we don't know that much about Barbara Broccoli. That's what I like. I was researching this and I'm like, we don't know much about her or Michael. I think we know more about Michael than Barbara. She's been very discreet. I recently found out that she had been married at one point. Apparently she has children. I've never seen a picture of her pregnant. I've never seen her with, like, she's very in control of her image. So it's easy to make those types of fantastical theories. I might be wrong, but I'm also might be right. I don't think it's intentionally that they put elements in there. That it's coincidentally, and you know, subconsciously, you put a little bit of yourself in art from time to time. You know, Pierce Brosnan. There's two scenes in Tomorrow Never Dies and The World's Enough that are very similar, and I'm pretty sure he might have tried to pull this scene again in Diana, and it's really creepy when you and it's something I've always been creeped out. He nuzzles a dead woman. He did it with Paris Carver, and he's sort of nuzzling her. He did it with Electra. I'm pretty sure, like, there's a moment where in Diana at the end, where everything is blowing apart after Miranda Foss is killed, he looks at her corpse, and I'm like, you know that Pierce Brosnan wanted to nuzzle that corpse.
That'll get his necrophilia funk on.
I don't think it's come from a fascination with necrophilia. I think, honestly, I'm going to take a guess. It probably comes from his own pain of dealing with that of his first wife, whether consciously or unconsciously. It's a theory, and I don't want to insult the man, but it's a repeating theme, and it seems like something that the actor brought. It was probably not on the page. It might have been. I don't know. I've never read the original script, but it's too coincidental. It looks too similar for not to be. And there's different directors and different writers for The World's Enough and Tomorrow Never Dies. So it feels like something from the actor. And I think the same thing happened with The World's Not Enough. And I think it's probably the most most Barbara Broccoli-esque of all the films. Because there's one point. It's early in the movie when Bond first arrives at the pipeline construction site, and Electra goes into church. She's shown, like, oh, look at this beautiful old church. You're gonna destroy this. It's part of our heritage. Blah blah blah. We don't know what he says. She comes out. She goes to speak to Davidoff, and she says, "Divert the pipeline. We can't destroy this thing." And Bond asks her, and he says, "Oh, your dad approved of this." And she said, "Well, my dad was wrong." And Bond, like, asks her, why are you avoiding this? You could have been a bloodbath. And she says, well, there's so much less. Our heritage is so limited, so we have to save it, basically. And, you know, the interaction between, it's still stuff we don't know. The interaction between Davidoff and Electra King sort of reminds me of, I'm assuming must happen when her and Michael have arguments where they fight. Because Michael was involved with the movies much longer than she was, especially at that time. Now, She's made probably as much. She's been more involved in the movies that probably he was at the same age. But he probably had discussions saying to her, "Yeah, that's how we did with your dad. That's how we did it. Don't change what's broken." And she said, "No, no, we're changing things." And that's leads some credence to my theory that she is Electra King. Like it doesn't, you know. I'm not gonna analyze every moment of the film and say, oh, that character is supposed to be Timothy Dalton, and that character is supposed to be Martin Campbell. It doesn't really work like that because other people have been involved. It's just the trace elements. You see the soupçon of Barbara and Michael's relationship, especially in that film. And also, it's a movie, and it's all in. If we follow the theory that they've been rotating lead producers on every film, it sort of works as every second movie has a strong sort of component of James Bond dealing either with conflict with parental figure, in this case M, but also it's a little bit more emotional. Casino Royale it feels, honestly, I was thinking about it this morning, and it's almost like une crise d'adolescence, like it's a teenager sort of disagreeing with a parent.
A rebellious teenager.
Yeah, rebellious teenager. Like, oh, you know, I'm going to break into your house. Oh, I'm going to steal your stuff. Oh, I'm going to not follow the orders. And at the end, like, come home, child. Skyfall, it's about, like, not only... I'd love to know more about Barbara Broccoli because Bond like sort of deals with M's death in that movie and what leads to her ultimate demise and the conflicts that they have. It feels like somebody who's dealing with parental issues. So it's something that, you know, fascinates me about the films in 21st century. I feel like the films have been not about nothing before, but they've been more aimed at broad entertainment, and it's only since the mid 90s that they slowly evolved to have a little bit more nuance, a little bit more artistic cred, and they've been like hiring directors that have some Oscars on their mantle. I mean, he might have made one of the worst movies, but Lita Mahori is an Academy Award winning director. Sam Mendes made Skyfall, won an Academy Award. His last movie in 1917 won a bunch of awards. So they've been hiring these guys that have a little bit more cred. They are not journeyman director that, you know, make one action movie, make one like sort of factory process. You know, even Michael Apted was more like documentary director. He never made a movie like that. So, sorry if I'm rambling along, but that's my theory, and I feel like something very interesting. I want to have your thoughts on it while I drink us a swig of coffee. Cheers.
À la tienne. No, it's an interesting theory. I mean, as you say, like it can't. There'd be no point in taking a look at every detail of the world as knotted up and seeing how it would fit into their life. Because, you know, if you did that, you'd say, oh, I guess Barbara killed her dad, like, or kidnapped her dad to have, like, it would just, it, you know, it wouldn't hold water if you actually started looking at every single plot element. But I would think that there's some credence to the notion that, the artist brings a little bit of what they know into their art. What they're familiar with, what they're interested in, what they're afraid of, what their ambitions are, what their hopes are, what their worst nightmares are. And I suppose so. But the thing where it becomes difficult to figure out how much of that is true with respect to the James Bond films is, going back to what you said, just how notoriously private Barbara and to an extent Michael are. I remember... we're right, guys. We said we're recording this on the Saint Jean, June 24th. I remember I guess at this point, 5 months ago, in January, one of the major you know, film publications had an exclusive interview with Barbara and Michael, and it was a feature length interview. I don't remember what the publication was, and that was surprising. It's like, really? Like, this is an actual interview? This isn't a farce? This is a, they really got to sat down with Barbara and Michael, and yeah, they talk about James Bond. And I think that was the time when Barbara said James Bond will never be a woman or whatever the heck. But they don't do that often. They don't allow for these interviews very often. So it's a little bit of a challenge to try to connect those dots, but it's, again, you know, it might be just one of those things that we'll only be able to better understand in the years to come. Even the people that work for them, they always say the same thing. You know, they're great, they're wonderful. It's like a family. You know, it sounds like somebody reading the script to a Fast and Furious film. It's a family.
It's about family.
You know, about family. Nobody really says anything else about them. Everybody seems to like working with them. The most I could say about Barbara would be from you read Nobody Does It Better. I have a copy as well, but I'm getting through it a little bit slowly. I have read, as listeners know by now, Some Kind of Hero, and maybe she's a little bit more of the two siblings. Her and Nick G, she can be the more combative of the two, the one of the two to be a little bit more to argue her points with a little bit more vim and verve in the pre-production phases and the direction the film should take. But other than that, I'm not going to start pretending I know a whole lot about Barbara Broccoli. I don't know anything about her.
Neither do I, but that's what makes that theory and discussion like that interesting. We don't know. Like, it's 99% speculation almost. Because when they do interviews, it's these platitudes where like, oh yeah, we're really trying to make this Bond special. We got all the girls, all the action. It's stuff they've been seeing since the 60s. I'd really love to like have them sit down with somebody like for hours. Record their thoughts and feelings and try and draw them out a little bit more so we find out a little bit more. I'd love, because it's, to me, as I said before in other platforms, in this platform, I don't want them to sell, and I think I want to see the heirs of Wilson and Broccoli take reins eventually whenever they want to start to maybe possibly retire. I'd love to see the baton pass. I think it is its own little thing where it still is cohesive artistically, because nobody bought them out. They've been involved, and it's because they want to be involved. And I'd love the kids to, you know, I'm gonna make Bond movies, and it's gonna be like it is about them in a way. It's when you look at it they're. And I'd love to like dig out deeper and see how much it is about the Broccolis and Wilson and the Saltzman. Their lives are intertwined with those movies. It's fascinating. Mm.
Hopefully, if the children do, if the torch is passed to the children, Greg and I don't know what the other ones are called, but if the torch, the proverbial torch, is indeed passed, you know, one hopes that they would go about producing the films with a little bit more regularity than they are now. I know, to be fair, there have been legal issues and financial issues that have prevented them, especially during the Craig era, from producing them as regularly, I'm struggling with that word, as we would like. It's not all on them, but I think, you know, we've also heard and read things. It's every coin has two sides, you know. Right. And there is that other side where you sometimes hear things and read things. You're like, yeah, they're really not in a hurry of making the next one, are they? you know, long gone are the days where we get a Bond film every year. And I think with the complexity of how these films are made, I think it would be foolish to even try to make one every year. You know, if the next one is a is a Dr. No from Russia with Love. Maybe you can knock it out in two. But, you know, three seems reasonable as opposed to four.
2-3 years is...
Or five.
My wish would be, like, the ideal would be 2-2-3. 2-2-3. So 2 years, 2 years, 3 years, and then you have another three. So every, in those years, video games, books, everything, cartoons.
That was one of my reasons why... You know, I wouldn't mind if it wasn't within the family anymore. But if the children do want to go on making the movies, and if they're ready and willing and have the energy, which are very key things, the desire and the energy to make them at a frequency that's not 5 to 5.5 years between installments, which is like, oh, you're going to play the new James Bond. We need you for 30 years. We'll make three movies. What? You know, yeah, sure. I mean, why not? I'm not as vocal about that anymore as I was a couple of years ago. I think that was just because the Spectre No Time to Die period, specifically early 2016 to about late 2017, early 2018, just before they announced Danny Boyle, it was just so bizarre. It was like, are they doing anything?
Yeah, you were very
are they grumpy. Talking to anybody?
I remember those days.
Yeah, that was one example where it just didn't look like they even felt like doing anything. So, but then again, they're very private, so you don't really know.
Which makes it a little bit frustrating. But, you know, who knows? We're still waiting for No Time to Die. I haven't seen new trailers. I don't know if they're gonna keep the same look, feel for the marketing. You know, they're going to have to like sort of re-excite audiences if and whenever it comes out. And I've been thinking about how they can do that. Do you think they'd try and make Billie Eilish make a music video? Because I don't think they were planning to do one, because it would have come out by now.
Look, I'm not a pop culture landscape expert, but from what little I know, other than YouTube, like, are music videos a thing anymore? Do people get excited about music videos, especially movie tie-in music videos?
I still do when they're neatly done, and I think you could have a neat looking her music videos have a strong like artistic look, feel, and design. They're kind of weird, and I'd love to. And she's been, you know, she's a young little girl still going through her own personal journey, and love to see that her version of Bond music video with her. Her crew of directors and are on, because she has a style that it's just she's not very sexualized. She's more like goofy in the way she dresses. She's not too creepy. She has an appearance and a look that makes her more approachable, but she's kind of weird and I don't know. She like I said, art.
It's unique. It's her. She doesn't placate to the standards.
Yeah, 19-year-old art chick that going. Like, I'd love to see like the thing she did with them on SNL, where they built a set where it rotates. It was kind of cool to see that being done on live on TV. I was like, wow, that's kind of neat. So I'd love to see her version of a. But yeah, there's no video games. I don't think they'll make a video game for the least, not even a board game.
I don't know. It's going to. I know the last time I was on the 007 store, which doesn't happen often. You know, there is a No Time to Die section, but it's all just a bunch of a black mug, a black bag. It's all black with in white characters and the font of the film, the movie's title. It's not terribly inspiring. I mean, I don't know, you know, will they redo a whole different marketing campaign? I'm not so sure. I'm sure they have a budget for that. The posters have been released. I'm sure they'll promote the posters with a little bit more vigor come the autumn. The only thing that happened, honestly, was I can't remember what the movie that was coming on November. It might have been Kong and Godzilla. I don't remember. But when whatever movie that was on November 20th left that spot in North America, well, the Barbara and Michael took it. So, you know, we get it a few days earlier than we would have on the 25th. It's now on the 20th. But like, when I saw that, I said, oh, somebody at the studio might be confident. But then I read, it's like, no, there was another movie that had that spot and the other movie just chickened out. So they took it. I think they took it in case. Like, there's still nothing definitive saying that the film will come out. Although, that being said, here in Canada, the major movie chain Cineplex is fully intent at, you know, with approval of the provincial governments, and they're very clear on that. But their desire is to absolutely open on Friday, July 3rd, which would be the Friday this is released, I think.
Yes.
So there's that. There's that.
Actually, the Dollar Theatre in Montreal apparently has reopened. They don't have that many movies. So I think they have Troll World Tour and something else, which I don't remember. Apparently, right now, the number one movie in America is Jurassic Park. Drive-in theaters released the movie, and apparently it's making some money. So good for the...
Nice, that's good to know. I mean, I'm a little bit worried about the infamous second wave. The experts say we're going to get that. That might kill everything. It could very well kill everything. I don't mean that literally, obviously. I'm not being facetious about what's going on. I mean the momentum. I'm referring to the momentum society seems to be gathering towards reopening. That's what I meant. Don't get cute with comments, please. So the second wave might affect all of this, but certainly as of this recording, La Saint-Jean, June 24th, you were giving it a go. You know, will we be able to take a plane and land in Heathrow? That's an entirely different question.
Sorry.
But as for No Time to Die and a bunch of other things happening in the fall, it's looking okay. Okay, not great, but it's looking okay.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. One thing I forgot, and we might want to give him a shout out, is I was invited last minute, I think, by Joe Darlington to participate to his yet somewhat untitled James Bond quiz show. I think he's still like, I think he wanted to call it Tuesday something, but it's like with scheduling, it might not always be on a Tuesday, but he had Tuesday trivia initially he wanted. Yes. But he has the Bond trivia card game, and he pitted me against two other head, and I don't remember the other gentleman's name, but it was kind of fun. It was very last minute. I replaced Scott. Apparently, he was Joe was not able to reach him. Communication problem of some sort, and he like I was waiting to actually watch the stream, and he texted like I posted something on YouTube and said, "Are you available?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I guess I haven't eaten or went to I took a quick bathroom break because I just came back from a 2-hour walk, so I was a little bit dehydrated, and I had to drink a little bit of fluids, and I participated to the game. It was fun. I actually bought the game.
That's cool.
Still waiting. I should be getting it. It said July 9th, but with the way that the post has been going on, I'm guessing July 29th. I don't expect it by July 9th. But it was fun. I hope you get to have your go at it. Protect the reputation of the James Bond complex.
Oh, you did the podcast just fine, Matthew. You won in one of the two rounds, so it's all good, man.
Yeah, I did. You're
crowned champion.
I won that second round, but I messed up two questions. I was never able to recuperate from those hits, and I lost. And then it was a dumb question. I don't remember, but I was like, oh, it's so stupid. I got tripped up. And one was like, who did the team, the James Bond team in Moonraker? And the answer was Monty Norman. And we're like, but are you? What? Anyway, it still was fun. So much that I ordered the damn game myself.
Did he do another one since then? I don't
know. Today is a week and a day later. So he hasn't done one this week. I don't know. Hopefully he does one again because it was fun. And I hope people who watched it were entertained. We aim to entertain here at the James Bond Complex.
Yes, we do. Yeah, it was pretty good. You did very well. I was very proud of you. I was I had my tissue box, not for that reason. It was more to dry my eyes. So when I was so happy that you had won.
That's the question for Lotilenia. I was like looking at what's her name, Lotilenia.
I did get nervous. I'm not gonna lie. I did get nervous. I was like, are you going to mess that one up? Of all the questions you get wrong, not that one. Damn it.
Yeah, I saw the poster that you have in your bedroom. It's creepy. Sexy Rosa Klebb.
Well, one person's creepy. Is with
another the apple in their mouth and like spread eagle.
With the leather.
Yeah, the leather. We'll be shot. Oh! Good times.
I'd like to give her a little shot somewhere.
Anyway, I think we're done. I know how long that episode, but it's you know, it's special.
Yes.
And we got a bunch of stuff coming out soon. Like I realized we forgot about the Man with the Golden Gun. Not the book, but the audio radio play discussion. It's in our archives. I don't think we put it on the docket to be released. It's something we both I realized. Oh wait, we did a recording for that. Where is that recording? It's probably on my computer, but like I haven't edited it, and I don't know if it's on. Is it on the list for episodes to be released? I don't think so.
Let's find out. Yeah.
Well, you look at that. I have to mention we also released our first Bond doodle. That I animated in quotation marks. It's a little snippet of an episode of the GoldenEye review that I animated because when we recorded that bit, like, both of us were cracking up. And after we recorded it, yeah, that was really funny. And I was like, I think I can do something. And I did something with it. And I think I'm going to go back. Like, I've been re-listening to our catalog slowly. I think I barely finished episode one, and I haven't found something that I really want to animate in that episode. I'm slowly going through Casino Royale. I will see. I might not. If you have episodes and snippets of a couple seconds that you think would make for a funny cartoon,
sure.
Throw me a link with the time codes of the snippet, and I might be inspired. But yeah, we have that. Oh, yeah, you sing?
Yeah, I think I'll have to take out the old Tascam, which we haven't used in months. Because I remember that was one of the last things we did in person in my living room. I mean, in the studio. Because it's not on the calendar. And I don't have it on my drive, so it's probably still hanging in the Tascam.
Are you sure we didn't record this remotely? I think we did.
Let's
have a look. Live podcasting with Matt and Gert. That's in my Rush section. My Rushes here. Do I have the Man? Yeah, no, it's remotely recorded. I see it. I have it. March 28th.
I have it.
Yeah, March 28th. Okay, the last time.
Cool. I don't have it in the calendar. This is going up on July 1st. Then Nobody Lives Forever. Then I have Casual Clothing. Then I have Archer. Then I have a debriefing because I'm assuming we'll record in July.
Yeah.
Then I have Spy Who Loved Me novelization, and then I have Rocketeer, and right. Then it ends.
Yeah, we're recording our this Saturday still.
Friday
with Jason. I don't remember. I think we said Saturday.
Whatever, we'll check with him. You look like you look very. You look like you have something you want to say. I don't know. You look like you need to get it off your chest.
I'm getting
incoming message. Okay.
Somebody hacking my computer.
Oh no.
Grishenko
Better luck next time, slugheads.
Okay, Boris is back again for
He thawed.
Oh, Jesus. He's working for MY.
Oh, God, those two lugheads have combined forces. That's not good.
Oh, man. We have people everywhere.
I am invincible.
Yeah, well, we do have people everywhere, wouldn't you agree, Boris? You dumb dunderhead. You gotta get out of that ice position. Lugged slughead. Yes, we do. We're at www.thejamesbondcomplex.com, which also serves as the Anchor account. Oh, no, excuse me, the Tumblr account, pardon me. Although we are on anchor.fm, hosted for free. We thank them for that. And we have a Facebook page, search for the James Bond Complex, a Twitter account, at the Bond Complex, on Instagram, for the visual artists out there, the photographers out there, search for the James Bond Complex, or at the James Bond Complex, rather. You can watch us on YouTube, search for the James Bond Complex, subscribe, and tickle us with the thumbs up button. We can also download us or listen to us at the very least on the Google Podcasts. I don't remember what that thing's called. Google Store, Google Play Store, Google, podcast section.
Now I think they changed it to Google Podcasts. Because it used to be YouTube, Google Music, now it's YouTube Music and Google Podcasts. It is getting so confusing.
Yeah, I know it is getting confusing. And of course, there's iTunes, Apple Podcasts, I believe it's called. So search for the James Bond Complex, subscribe to the James Bond Complex, write a review. And in this festive summertime season, if you find it in your hearts to leave us a five-star glowing Golden Gun review, please do. I'm on, where the hell am I? I'm on Instagram at, I don't know what it's called, Edgar Chaput SOS, I think. This is just my name with SOS at the end. Who gives a shit?
I'm at MattAuclair007 on Instagram, and I'm on the verge of closing my Twitter. Like, I've reset my entire phone. I have yet to link to the James Bond Complex Twitter or even my own Twitter. I think I'm just going to let that thing rot away.
All good, man. All good. I checked my account. I hadn't tweeted. I go back because some people will still DM me, so I want to be polite and at least answer them, but I don't tweet anymore. So last thing I tweeted was like the first few days of May or something like that. I saw that the other day. I was like,
wow. That feels like a lifetime ago now.
Yeah, it does. Well, we're entering July pretty soon. By the time when this comes up, we will be in July. It'll be July 1st. On that note... merci, toujours un plaisir, et à la prochaine!
Au revoir!
Was it good for you too?